This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the all-new Razor Guide Pack from Outdoor Edge has it all. Coming in at only 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Shirk, and this week we are going to be speaking with Troy Dietrich. Troy Dietrich is, first of all, a really, really cool guy. We have a great conversation. We talk about some personal life stuff, and we talk about some deer hunting stuff, and it's just an all-around great conversation with Troy. But Troy had a fantastic season. He had a lot of big changes happen this past year. He purchased his new home that has some land on it. And, of course, the first thing on Troy's mind, like any of us, is going to be, how are we going to hunt this property? And he tells a pretty cool story about having one encounter with a buck that he saw in the summer and ended up connecting with in the fall. And it is a fantastic whitetail, one of those things that it's a whitetail we dream about. And, you know, he had a fantastic hunt and breaks down that story and kind of breaks down his hunting strategy on this new property and how he's learning to adapt and hunt this property and do things in an efficient way, because it's a little bit different than his public land hunting that he's been doing the past few years, even though, you know, he shares with us that that is still in his blood. And I can really relate to Troy because I do a mixture of both myself. I hunt private land. I love, you know, food plots, habitat manipulation, hunting strategy. I love doing all that. But there's also something about being in large, monotonous woodland and trying to figure out points and vegetation types and just getting away from pressure. That's just a different element. I find that, you know, I've said that time and time again, the North Woods that I hunt, it's pulling me in closer and closer every year. You know, the time factor is what gets me, but I really, really enjoy the time that I do get to spend hunting at camp and things like that. It's a great conversation that I don't think everybody can relate to, because not only does he have a great hunt at home on his property that he did some work to and had a really cool strategy in how he found this buck and went in to kill him, he turned around and went out to Ohio a few days later and connected his first time in the tree on a really nice buck in the Ohio woods public land. Talks about the scouting he did leading up to that hunt in the years past, and just how blessed he was. So, you know, here we are in mid-January. As this episode drops, tomorrow is the last day of statewide muzzleloader season. And, man, I can't lie. Like, this is always a little bit of a depressing time for me just because I love to hunt right up until the end. I know there's a lot of guys out there that when archery season closes or when rifle season closes, or when the new year happens, like there's a cutoff date where people, you know, a lot of guys will just be like, eh, it's over, time for getting ready for next year. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that are already out and finding some sheds and doing some scouting and trying to prepare for next year. And, like, I love that stuff too. But at the same time, like, deer season is open. I still have some tags. I just want to be out there, and I just want to hunt. I just want to hunt. That's all there is to it. And hoping to connect with something with my muzzleloader. This final weekend is going to be a hunt at camp. We got a group of guys. I think it's 10, 12, 14. I don't know how many people are going, but just another camp camaraderie hunt, making some little pushes here and there. We're supposed to be getting some snow. Hopefully that means it makes it a little bit easier to find a couple pockets where deer are at and just have a good time with guys. And, you know, I could tell, though, that it's preparation season. I've been starting to get a lot of messages about food plots and how should guys approach this area on their property for planting a food plot. How should they go about it? What should they plant? And I could tell that's good. Now, I'm glad you guys are thinking about that, because preparing for that stuff now makes it go a whole lot easier and a whole lot smoother than waiting till the last minute. And, you know, for those of you who listen to this and don't know, for a living, I'm an agronomist. I work with row crops and farmers. So, you know, when it comes to soils and planting and stuff, I have a pretty good handle on how to approach that and getting good seed to soil contact and getting stuff to grow. And, I've been fortunate that I've had a pretty good exposure around food plots for a long time and try to help. So, you know, if you guys are new to food plots or you just have questions or want to try something different, you know, feel free to reach out to me. And I'll try to help you the best I can. You know, you can reach out to me on Instagram at Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. You can do the same on Facebook. And then our email is pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. You know, those are great ways to get a hold of me. And I would love to help you and try to work through some of that stuff with you. One more quick thing. The other thing that I always find funny is the minute that deer season closes for a lot of people, turkey season becomes the first thing on their mind a lot of time. And I used to be like that, but you know, as time goes by and life gets more chaotic, deer hunting has definitely been my thing I'm most passionate about. And I typically don't really start thinking about turkeys and turkey hunting until it's really, really close to the spring season. It's a short window for me when I'm maybe a little bit fired up about chasing turkeys. But I had one of the coolest experiences in the turkey woods or in the woods in general this week while I was working. So real quick story, it was one of those things that I just have to share because you don't get to experience something like this that often. I was pulling soil tests in a field for a farmer that I work with, and as I was finishing up this sample, I was in the corner of a very large field, and when I looked in the far corner, I saw a black object, and I'm like, that looks like a gobbler strutting. And sure enough, I saw him kind of move his fan and twist, and yep, that's a gobbler. I'm like, man, I'm pretty close to him. I was only about 50, 60 yards. He let me drive my side-by-side that close to him and didn't move. Excuse me. And I just start watching him, and I look, and I saw another gobbler come out of the timber and start to square up. I was like, oh man, there's going to be a fight. This is going to be really, really cool to watch. And they started going at it and flopping each other, which I've seen toms fight before, and it's a cool sight. But then they started pecking at each other, and I saw them grabbing each other with their beaks and holding on and twisting. And I was like, man, I never saw that intense of fighting. I was like, they're so fixated, I wonder if I could get closer. So I drove my side-by-side up to them within 20 yards. Didn't have a care in the world. We're so fixated on fighting that that didn't matter. I thought, I wonder if I can get closer. So I got out, and I kept walking and watching these birds and kept getting closer and closer and closer. At one point, they kind of saw me, and like the one split off and took like two or three steps away, but the other one was so fixated, they started going right back at it. And at first, I was like sneaking, and I filmed it the whole time with my phone, but I got right up at the end. I just decided they're not going to run away from me. I walked 3 feet away from these gobblers that were just fighting to the death. It was absolutely crazy. And they weren't making too much noise because they were so fixated, but you hear some fighting purrs, and you know, they're flopping each other with their wings every now and then. But their heads were so beat up from them pecking and biting and everything else, and it's just a crazy video. And if you want to see some of that, I posted some of that on my Instagram as a reel. And it's a longer reel. It's like a 3-minute video. But going towards the end of that video is when I'm right up close and personal with them, and it's just a really, really cool thing. I often wondered, like, you know, at the end they split up and kind of ran away. Not necessarily running away from me as much as one was running away from me and the other one was chasing after, trying to keep fighting. I often wondered if I wouldn't have intervened in any way, shape, or form, would they have just fought to the death? I don't know. Maybe somebody who knows more about turkeys can answer that question, but really crazy, crazy thing they see in the woods. So hopefully you're able to get out and see some cool stuff in the woods, get out and enjoy creation. There's still hunting and trapping to be done. I know I am going to milk every ounce of hunting out of me that I can the final weekend of the extended season. I've got a plan to go out and hopefully knock a doe or two down in my spot that I have in the extended portion of the state, which would be, I believe it's January 27th or January 28th. So it's right at the end. We'll ride it out to the end, and you know, I'm hoping to get out and do some hiking and some scouting and start the stuff for next year. You know, there's always work to be done on private land, and I've got some things I'd like to check out for next year on public land and some goals that I've set for myself. I've got cameras to pull, cameras to check that have been soaking, so still plenty to do to keep you occupied. It's still, I just can't believe we wait for it so long, and then it just like that, boom, it's over. But hey, on that happy note, I hope you guys have a great week, and thanks for tuning into this episode with Troy Dietrich. All right, we're rolling here with Troy Dietrich. It is Dietrich, right? You don't pronounce it any other special way, do you, Troy?
Yeah, you actually pronounce it exactly right. Yeah.
I went to school with a couple Dietrichs, but like you spell it with two T's, and how do you spell it?
Yeah, T or D-I-E-T-T-E-R.
Yeah.
ICH.
Yeah, it's a little shorter or a little longer than some of the people that I went to school with and the way they spelled it. But Troy, thanks for coming on, man. I was looking forward to this chance to chat with you because number one, we don't live too far away. We're in a similar neck of the woods here, but just chatting about your hunting season, man. You had a heck of a season.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure was. I don't know if I'll ever have another season quite like this one.
So, Troy, for those listening to this episode here, just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about where you're from and what your passion is.
Yeah, my name's Troy Dietrich. I'm hail from outside of, or I should say, southeast Pennsylvania. My passion is bow hunting, really. All kinds of bow hunting, mostly whitetail. And mostly hunt here in Pennsylvania. We're able to pick up a private piece this year. Me and my family moved to a nice chunk that we hunt. But I also spend a lot of time hitting the mountains and hunting some public land as well. But, just obsessed with whitetail hunting like the rest of us.
Yeah, like the rest of us. And I'm kind of curious, like, where does it stem from for you? Because, I mean, everybody's got, like, some kind of beginning story that they were introduced to it. But, I mean, what lit the flame for you?
Yeah, it's kind of maybe a different story, but just like probably like you, I think I've heard your story before, and like most PA guys, my grandparents, my grandfather hunted, my dad hunted, so we always grew up hunting. 12 year old was that coveted year that you just could not wait to turn 12 to go out hunting. You know, nowadays you can take your kids out hunting younger and stuff like that, which is pretty cool, but for us it was like chomping at the bit until you turn 12 so you can go hunting. So that's how it was for me. I enjoyed it a lot, but through my like high school years and even outside of high school, I hunted, but I didn't take it very seriously. It wasn't really until I kind of related to around the time where I really started taking my faith seriously, honestly. I got saved in 2013. And, at that point it was like, I wasn't out raging all night long anymore. And, I could spend more time waking up early and getting in the woods. And that was like when my obsession with hunting just kind of took off. So
the passion for hunting and bow hunting definitely stemmed from family, and it was probably a combination. It was in your blood and, yeah. Some of it was social pressures, but, you know, for those listening who know what Troy and I are talking about, and that, and if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind touching a little bit about that because that's near and dear to me. But sure. what it means to be saved and that connection that you have afterwards in the woods, it's different than when you're just in pursuit of game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, for me, I mean, just to give you a quick story, my life just consisted of just women and partying pretty much. And that's just what I ran after the hardest at a very young age, you know, 15, 14 years old when I started doing that stuff. I kind of grew up knowing who God was and who Jesus was, but I didn't really know him. If you would have asked me then, I would have said that, you know, I'm a Christian, but what I really was, and I was living a very selfish life only for myself really. And, somewhere in my young 20s, it just kind of hit me that there was something more, you know, I needed something more, and it wasn't being fulfilled by staying up and getting drunk all night long and chasing women. It was something more than that. So, through a series of events, in fact, I was actually chasing a girl when she led me to church. So it was kind of funny how that worked to my advantage, but I ended up getting hooked up with a local church and really took my relationship with Jesus seriously. Once I, you know, confessed my life to him and said, I can't live this life on my own anymore, and I'm surrendering to you. You know, I'm here to live for you. My life changed greatly for the better. But getting back to what you were saying about the connection in the woods, yeah, I mean, with a sober mind, I mean, a lot of things are a lot better with a sober mind, but even being in nature, it's like next level when you're out there in God's creation, just looking at everything that he put together for us, you know?
Troy, I really appreciate you sharing that with everybody on this, because that's not always an easy thing to talk about with in front of people. And I've shared my faith, and I've shared that's over this podcast. I've shared it in person and in situations with people one on one. And it's a big thing, and it's something that, while you can describe it, and you could probably talk podcast after podcast and hour after hour about the love that we have from our Savior, it's one of those things that you still don't quite understand it until you feel it.
Yeah.
And when you truly accept it, it's so hard to explain, but like, I just wish that on everybody. But man, we're, you touched on something in your message there, and you were talking about, you were living your life being selfish on your own.
Yeah.
And while I accepted Christ and trying to do everything to steer from my selfish ways, we were kind of talking about it before we hopped on. We're on the show here. You know, it's so easy to get wrapped up in selfishness in the woods. It's so funny how you can like have such an appreciation of creation and be in the woods, be connected to God in a time of peace, and yet let that time also cloud your judgment and be selfish when you're in pursuit of, you know, what I typically do, and that's the pursuit of a mature buck or just my time. I mean, just the pursuit of taking my time away from, I guess, reality in my day-to-day life, and just being in the woods and that pursuit and chase. Like, there's a fine line there too, and I know, you know, I struggle with it, and you talked about how you struggle with it too. Like, I'm not really making a point here. It's just like, it's a real struggle.
yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, it's always a tough balance, and I would say that if you ask my wife, she would probably tell you I don't get it right more than half of the time. So
yeah, mine too. Maybe we should introduce them sometimes. They could start a support group.
Yeah, along with everyone else's wives.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's what we're missing. We talk about hunting, but we're really not doing everything we can to start our wife support groups. Maybe that would be the connection they need to. I'm talking selfish now. I'm just trying to figure out ways we can get in the woods more. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But now, shifting gears, man, you moved into a new piece of property this year, had a fantastic hunting season in Pennsylvania, and then I know you ventured out to Ohio and had a heck of a hunt out there, man. So first of all, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, appreciate it.
So the new property, I'm like, when it comes to like private land hunting, like everybody has their niche, and you know, some people are 100% public land, and you shoot this deer on public land. That's the only thing that matters. If you shot it on private, nobody cares. And then like I come from the other end where I know private land hunting's different. It's a different playing field, but at the same time, there's different variables and goals you can set on private land, because you have the ability to manage a couple of other exterior influences a little bit differently, and maybe the bar sets a little bit higher, but the challenge is still just the same. It's just a different playing field. I don't know if that makes sense, but I mean, like, what were your going into this season? Let's back up for just a second. So we're talking about going into the season. Were you used to hunting private land before this new piece of property, or like where did your passion lie before that?
A little bit, but not really this caliber. I grew up hunting I would actually say all private land, but it was always your very suburban type situations. You know, if someone had 20 acres behind their house, that was decent and stuff like that. Like, so where I grew up, up the road from my house, there was a church property I could hunt, and then a neighboring property I could hunt. It was fairly decent hunting growing up. I killed a few deer there, but quite a few deer there, but nothing ever of substantial. You know, they're just, that neck of the woods just never held, I don't want to say never, but rarely held good deer. And that was only, you know, five miles from here where I live now. But that's kind of how it is in these suburban areas, though. So anyway, I grew up hunting private. We have a place in Bradford County, but it's it's 18 acres, so it's not, you know, it's not like it's a huge parcel. Mm-hmm. But about, I want to say probably about like 7 or 8 years ago or so, I started almost hunting at least 75% of my hunting was public land. So the last like 5 to 7 years, I've been hunting almost strictly public land. I would almost never hunt any of those parcels that I had permission growing up and stuff like that. Mostly because the deer hunting was much better on public land. And so that's kind of what I've been cutting my teeth on the last 5 years or so. Buying this property was always kind of an underlying dream of ours to own property, but I'd never, I never thought I would actually own a property. I have 50 acres here, so I never thought I would own a property that big. It just, it all worked out this year, and it just somehow, you know, I don't want to say God teed it up for us, but he did. I mean, we really are extremely blessed to be able to purchase this place this year and make it work. So getting back to that, you know, once I got this place here, it was undoubtedly that I was going to hunt this hard.
Absolutely.
But it was kind of funny because even this year, before I shot my buck, I probably hunted public 50% of the time still, because I have some places that I'm pretty invested in where, you know, there's good gear on, and there's just something a little bit different and adventurous to going literally 2, 3, 4 miles into a big public land piece and trying to kill a mature whitetail, you know? But as you were kind of hinting on before, owning a property, it's just because there's slightly less pressure doesn't mean that there is not a lot of neighboring pressure and that there's a lot of work and strategy that still goes into it. Like I put very light pressure on my property this year. I tried to hunt it extremely wisely and I, you know, put a lot of time and effort into managing the property this summer as well, putting food plots, water holes, hanging stands. I mean, you name it, you know. So.
Yeah, they're two different passions. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's all work. It's all preparation for the season. Mm-hmm. And like I saw something on social media today. A guy posted something. Would you rather shoot 150-inch buck in suburbia or 120-inch buck in the mountains? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't think the inches is what I'm going after at this point. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm going after is which of those deer do I have a greater story leading up to? Which have I put more work into going into? Have I run 3, 4 years of experience following this deer in suburbia, and I can only catch him during this part of the season, and it just so happened that I was able to connect with him this season because all these things fell together. What if you want to compare that to saying I shot a 120-inch buck on public land during a deer drive with my family? Is that the same thing? And I have no problem with any of them, and I'd shoot either one in any situation. It's just my point, like that pursuit and the chase to get you there, like that's what's important. It's not a matter of did you shoot it on private, did you shoot on public, because I mean, I know talking with you before, like you put a lot of work in regardless if it's your private or your public.
No doubt. I mean, it wasn't like I, I mean, as I stated before, I put a ton of work in and really found way more enjoyment doing that than I, not that I thought I would have, but man, it's that's like a passion in itself, is like managing the land here. I mean, it's just like,
and it's only going to grow. Take it from my experience. Like it only gets, you only think of cook ideas up more. Like you're going to be sitting in your stand throughout hunting seasons and you're going to be looking at your property and you're going to be going, you know, this really needs to be done this way. I need to have this part of my property void of invasives and create a nice corridor, or this area is too open. It's too park-like. I need to adjust. Like you're going to do that as long as you have that property. The work is never going to be done. You're always going to be fine tuning this and thinking that. And it's just, it's a labor of love, but I mean, we're kind of, we're kind of flirting around that a little bit. I want you to kind of dive into this. So when you got this property and you stepped on this property, like, how did your mind switch? Or what were some of the first things you were looking at doing to say, this is how I got to do this to make this property hunt for me or figure out the neighboring deer? Like, what was the start to finish process for you since you own?
Yeah. That's a good question. I was able to do a lot more this year than I would have imagined I was going to be able to do. I kind of thought it'd be nice to eventually someday put some food plots in, you know, but I actually was able to figure that out this year and put some food plots in. As for the timber, it's about 50-50 timber and ag. Most of the timber is in an easement, so I actually cannot cut anything in the timber, which is like, it pains me a little bit, but it's got beautiful surroundings around it where it's still very huntable. But I would like to do some TSI and stuff, but I really can't because I can only cut trees that are dead and stuff like that. The previous owner sold it off to a land, you know, basically a land trust. What do you call it? Conservation easement. So, other reasons why we were able to afford the property too, though. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. But this year, I mean, really the first time I walked around it, I just knew it was absolute. I almost couldn't even draw up a property that's much better. Honestly, I know people are probably just like, oh, this guy's just has all the luck, right? But seriously, it's just. I was blown away by it and that just thought if I could manage to get this place, this is going to be some outstanding hunting. But, other than that, I don't know, just thinking about stand locations and stuff like that. But it really wasn't until like the summer, when I was running trail cameras and stuff like that, just trying to figure out deer movement and living here and seeing the deer movement too, to where I was able to put a little bit better plan and see where they're bedding and stuff like that. But, a friend of mine is, a farmer, so he's farming my land for me, but we worked out a deal where he's I'm giving him free rent. He's planting his crops for nothing, and then he's planting my food plots and spraying them as well. So I'm buying the seed, but he's putting the he's tilling it in with his equipment, spraying it and stuff like that. But I have about 16 acres of tillable, and I have maybe 4-ish acres of food plot. So it's not, you know, all of, you know, I'm not planting these big fields and food plots, but I'm just putting these little corner food plots in and stuff like that. So that's why I was able to do that. Now I'm not getting any income off of the rent, but, or off of the farmer, but it's not very high around here to begin with. So it was easy for me to kind of wash that out.
Yeah, it's a really, really unique setup there. And I think a lot of people that own property would have the ability to do something very similar. It's just a matter of what are your goals with the property? And, you know, your goals are for the property or to have it for hunting. And I think that's an awesome opportunity, and food, you know, food is so important to set it up. I'm kind of curious when you had said, when you got the property, you said, I don't think I could have drew it up any better. Like it just lays out perfect. So, when you say that statement, I want to dig a little deeper into that. What about it specifically? Was it just the way the topography laid, or like what really keyed you in that you were like, this is what makes this property so good for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Besides just the location, it's a big chunk of land in an area where it's fairly residential living. So obviously the deer will congregate here a little bit more, but back to the, actual physical land. It's got a creek running through either side of it. So there's two creeks that run on the, edges of the property. And, one's a fairly nice sized creek and the other one is more of a stream. So that's awesome. It's got a big, big valley, a huge valley that goes down into the creek. So that's almost like park-like atmosphere. It's extremely beautiful, but the deer do use it as well, but it's a big flat, open hardwood valley. And then there's three or four main fields and they're separated. Most of them are separated by like very nice hedgerows. So you have these hedgerows that these deer can run down and feel a little bit secure, and then go to these different food plots at, or just the aglets out in the field now. And then just some thick bedding on either side of the property as well. So, it's gorgeous.
That's really cool. And so then you get into summer scouting, seeing cameras. Did, as you were doing your scouting, you know, I'm sure you walked the property in the off season, you had ideas and thoughts in your head, and then run cameras and start to confirm or deny those, predetermined thoughts that you have. Were the deer kind of doing what you thought? Were they doing things a little bit differently? And what was your inventory like? Were you surprised in the first couple card pulls throughout the summer, or, you know, what did that look like for you?
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think the deer were using the property, pretty well, like I thought they would. Let's see. I'm trying to think if anything really stands out differently. I mean, I manipulated a lot of it. Not a lot of it, but I put the food plots in before it was just row crops. So, like, after they took the wheat off, it's just barren, you know. But now they have my crops to feed on after they took the wheat off. And I added a food plot in this real brushy area. It's like not even a quarter acre food plot, but I hollowed that out. And they started using that like crazy. pretty much just figuring out the bedding more was helpful for me. Staying out of the bedding areas too. It was tempting to kind of, it's still such a new property to me, so it's very tempting to just like want to like know every nook and cranny of it. But also in the same token, it was like, don't really need to go in this extremely thick bedding because I know what's in there. It's just falling over trees and briar patches and all kinds of stuff. So let's leave that to the deer. And, you know, sure enough, that was an excellent bedding area. And then as for the card pulls, I was very pleased with what I found. One of the first card pulls, there was I think it was like 7 or 8 2-plus-year-old deer buck on it in the summertime. Just like, whoa, this is, you know, there's a whole like herd of quote-unquote mature buck. I mean, if you call a 2-year-old mature buck or not, but so that was pretty awesome. And then throughout the summer, just seeing them, you know, I held some deer, but a lot disappeared as well. So I'd say maybe 50% of the ones that I saw during the summer kind of stuck around that I saw throughout the season. But I was definitely pleased. Like I said, better quality deer than where I grew up, which wasn't far from here. But maybe not as heavy and as big of deer as that I hunt in the mountains and in these big parcels, clear cuts and stuff like that.
So the one you ended up wrapping your tag around, was that a deer that you had pictures of in the summertime, or was he somebody that filtered in into archery season?
Yeah, probably a little bit of both. So I ran about 8 trail cameras on my property this summer all year long, and I never had him on camera. I did see him at the end of July in broad daylight walking across my field. We're literally out back eating dinner with the family, and that's another thing I want to touch on too, is that we use our property for recreating too. You know, it's not, I'm not like, we call it Dan Sturgis or whatever, just like, you know, just purely whitetail, you know, that's, we use it during the summer. We cut off recreating on it, you know, maybe a month before season started,
yeah,
or
right,
something like that. But other than that, I mean, we're ripping it side by side or a four wheeler or whatever around it almost daily. You know what I'm saying? We weren't bombing through the bedding areas, but I think they kind of got used to that. But anyway, the buck that I ended up killing, I saw him in July walking across my field, and just jaw dropping. Just it was easily the biggest buck that I've seen with my own eyes on public land. I mean, not in a deer farm or something like that. So I couldn't believe it, but I never had him on camera, and I was expecting that, okay, now he showed up, I'll probably get him on camera. He avoided all of my cameras. I don't know if he didn't live here. I don't know if he's just good at avoiding the cameras or what his deal was. But even the first day I saw him, I was like, don't get hung up on this deer, because I've done that before, and that almost can ruin a season when you do stuff like that. First year into this property, it's awesome that big one's around, but also my main objective was to kill a 3+ year old. Doesn't really matter what size the rack is, just wanted to kill a three or four year old deer. So I told myself just stick to that. So I did, and long story short, he showed up on my camera end of September one time in the middle of the night, and so it was like, okay, he's around, he's doing his rounds, but does he live here or doesn't he, you know? So that was cool, but again, I told myself I'm not going to get hung up on that. And then two days before I killed him, he showed up on my camera, but I didn't know it was him because I have some cell cameras, and I could just tell he was a good buck, but I didn't really have like a good glimpse of his rack. And then I ended up killing him a couple days later. Even when I shot him, I didn't know that it was this giant that I saw in the summertime until I walked up to him. So it was a crazy surprise and just a super cool experience because how elusive he was. I did end up pulling the rest of my cards then, like way later in a year, and found that he was on a few more of my cameras, but very, very little, you know, just here and there during October, like once mid-October. And that same time frame that he was on my cell cameras, he like hit all my cameras. Like he must have just been like really circling my property.
So did that kind of lead you to believe that the deer was not necessarily homebody to your area, but mostly just kind of cruising through? Was this kind of like a transition in the pre-rut towards the rut when he would have been checking out doe groups on your property and just kind of hung around in that general area near a bedding area? Tell me a little bit about, it sounds like a short amount of time transpired from that cell camera picture to when you killed him. So kind of ease in a little bit on what your strategy was and how did you have a stand place for this deer? Like, you know, key us in on some of those things that led you to this success.
Yeah. It's hard to even try to make that conclusion. I like to think that he was living on me and just being elusive, but he could have been, he could be one of these backyard bucks, you know, that rarely leaves a 5-acre backyard somewhere, you know, but I have some of the only food around and stuff, so I find it hard to believe that he wasn't coming to my food and eating and stuff like that. So I still don't know. I wish I could conclude that better, but I don't know if I just got real lucky or the area that I killed him. The area that I killed him, I have never hunted before, and that's where I killed him. So I almost am led to believe that he might kind of bed there. It was a very unpredictable spot that you would want to hunt/kill. But anyway, leading up to that, so I got that cell cam picture of him on a Thursday, sometime between 5 and 8 o'clock or something like that. And I took off Friday to go up hunting up north where I go. It's about an hour or two from my house. So I get up at the crack. I mean, I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, drive up there and then go 3 miles in hunting and stuff like that. And I rarely go up hunting, up there with anyone. Except like Aaron Hepler, my buddy up there. I hunt with him a lot up there, but other than that, there's pretty much only like one or two guys that go with me to these spots. I asked my buddy from church. He's a pastor at my church. Actually, he has off every Friday cause he works for the church, and he's into bow hunting, but he doesn't have the time or doesn't put in the time like we would. So I asked him to go and he was all pumped. He was jacked. He wanted to go up with me. So long story short, Thursday night, I get a picture of that buck on my property, which I didn't know was the one I killed, but I just knew it was a darn good deer. So I knew he was chasing doe around literally on a hot doe that night. It was October 26th or something like that. So I was like this close to canceling with my buddy and being like, hey, why don't we just hunt my place tomorrow kind of a thing. But he was already sold on wanting to go up there. It's like, all right, let's not change plans. The truck was already packed. So left my property when he was on it, went up north, hunted there. That Friday, came home early afternoon, went to this like Harvest Fest thing with my family at my parents' church Friday night. Friday night, I still didn't know where I was going to set up on Friday, on Saturday morning. It was a north wind, which is really rare for this area. Not really rare, but it doesn't hunt very good for my property to be a north wind. So I had very limited spots. I do have maybe 5 or 6 presets up. One of them was very close to my house, and I haven't even sat there yet, but it would have been a very quick, easy setup. So I was kind of thinking that would have been a virgin set for this north wind, and I think it would have been a good rut funnel. And then the other one was at the tail end of my property, and where I never hunted. And that morning I woke up and I still didn't know where I was going to sit. And I'm like pretty organized with that stuff. Like before I fall asleep the night before, I have to like know exactly what I'm doing. And I still didn't. So that morning when I was just doing my morning routine, my devos and stuff, I was so tired from the day before, woke up so early and stuff like that. And, was just kind of wrestling with where I was going to go. I literally almost was like debating on, do I even go out? Do I crawl back into my bed? But I was like, dude, it's end of October. Weather's perfect. Mm-hmm. Like I would have never did that, but it was in the back of my mind, sure. You know? But anyway, there was only a couple spots that set up good for a north wind. So this spot that I ended up killing them, I kind of did a, different style access to it from my property. I rode my pedal bike down my road and then cut into my property and then and got into where I was set up for him.
So this was a pre-hung set, but you just took a different access to this stand?
No, not a pre-hung set. I don't even have any stands in this okay. area. So I would say more than 50% of the time I'm just taking my saddle out, I'm just climbing the tree.
Okay.
Just mobile hunting my property. I was going to set in the preset behind my house because it was real quick and easy. It was kind of the easy way out. And I was kind of running late. So I even got set up a little bit after like first light. You know, I'd like to film my stuff and whatnot. So it takes a while to get all set up. But yeah. And then that morning it was the 29th of October, just a sweet cold morning, very little wind speed. Wind was perfect. I actually thought he was going to be running through this bedding. And when I say he, I just mean a buck. I just thought the bucks were going to be running through this bedding thicket I was hunting the edge of. And he actually came in the opposite way that I thought he was going to, but he was pushing doe. So he was on a doe and a fawn. And just, you couldn't root it up any better. It just came right in front of me about 20 yards. I drew back on him. Couldn't get a shot. I ended up letting down. And his doe kind of slipped into my strong side of my saddle, side of my tree. And then I waited for him to come out behind this tree that he was behind, and he came out about 10 yards, just stopped broadside, just demolished, hard shot him, and just went 30 yards and died.
Man, that's the kind of stuff you live for. That's fantastic.
It was insane. Yeah, I was.
So when did the adrenaline dump happen? Was it right then and there, or was it after you realized which deer this was?
Yeah, it was. I didn't even realize what deer it was because I saw it drop. And I knew it was dead, but I was like, it was such a beautiful morning. I didn't want to like rush anything. I just wanted to enjoy it. You know, I just sat in my stand, enjoyed it probably for another hour. And then I went up and got my family because I knew the deer was dead. Even on my way out, I just classed in to make sure it was dead. And I just, you know, I purposely did not look at the rack with my binoculars because I was like, I'm going to get my family, my 2.5-year-old, my newborn, and my wife, and let's do the blood trail here. And, yeah, so when I walked up on it, it was like, I mean, I think my words were just no freaking way, just over and over again. I was like, there's no way I killed this buck. Because obviously it was number one on the hit list, but I almost wrote it off because I didn't want to get hung up on it. But anyway, it all happened pretty quickly. So when it happens like that for me, I don't even get the shakes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I get the shakes and adrenaline going crazy if I see that deer coming in from far. Then it's like I can't even hardly stay still, you know? But for this, it just, plus with filming your hunts, you have to like stay so like kind of like triple focused on everything. You're just like going back and forth between everything. Funny story, I didn't get this on film because I double pressed the record button.
Oh.
So I, I had the whole hunt in, well, the whole hunt as in the shot time period, all in frame the whole time. It's like I have a second angle camera that has me, like, you see my finger zooming in and like focusing and everything else, and it wasn't even on record, so that makes me sick. But
yeah, I'm sure it does. Just one of the many reasons why I haven't pursued the whole filming your hunt.
Oh man, I can't even tell you how many times I've screwed up so many more times than I have on film. But yeah, so I mean, after I shot it, I knew it was a beautiful deer, and I saw that deer 2 days before in the morning, actually driving down the road, and I never saw him. I saw him in daylight with velvet, and then I saw him on trail camera, like once or twice before this time I shot him. So I knew what he looked like, but I didn't know like that much detail of him. He's a humongous body deer, and his rack's a little bit taller and a little bit higher and a little bit darker. So when I saw him, on Wednesday, the day before, so I got a cell cam picture on Thursday night, but I saw him Wednesday morning around 9 or 10 o'clock driving down the road. And I was like, man, that's a beautiful deer. But again, I didn't know that it was this, I call it the drop time deer or moose nose. He's got a kind of a crazy nose to him. I didn't know it was him. But when I shot him that day, I knew it was the one I saw 2 days earlier when I was driving down the road. So I was like, that's him. That's not him. I was like, told my wife, I think I killed that one that we saw the other day from the car, you know? So yeah.
That's fantastic. I mean, you talk about icing to the cake on your first year. There's definitely a gratification when you do it on your own place, regardless of how you do it, because there's blood, sweat, and tears. It's your home turf. You grow an attachment to that. That's just kind of hard to describe if you don't have it and do stuff with it yourself. So, congratulations on that. I'm kind of curious, was Ohio something spur of the moment because you filled your tag when you did, or did you have that planned out ahead of time?
Yeah, no, it was completely spur of the moment. We just had our second child going 5 months ago now. So I told myself I wasn't going to do any out of state hunting this year. I usually like travel maybe a week out of state for the last couple of years. And, so I told myself I wasn't going to do any out of state hunting this year. And, I was able to convince my wife into letting me go for 3 days to Ohio. My buddies were already out there, and I tipped them off to a spot that I hunted the year before, but didn't have any luck, but it just looked good. I went out for rut hunting in Ohio last year and got skunked, and then went back in late season. I think it was early January this year, and it wasn't a very good hunt. It was like 9 degrees and there's crunchy snow on the ground. So it was pretty impossible to kill a deer with a bow out there in those conditions. But I found some good areas. So I tipped them off to that. They went back there. They were out there for a whole week. And, so I had a place to stay. So I kind of was able to I had vacation days left, because I killed my PA buck in late October. And I deliberately save a ton of vacation days just so I can take off 1-2 days a week pretty much through that whole like October and November time frame. So I had some vacation days to burn, and I said, can you manage for 3 days? Let me go for 3 days. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, she allowed me. She's a good woman. but anyway, so I drove out there on Monday. I bought my tag the night before. On Sunday, drove out there on Monday, left my house at 1 o'clock in the morning, got out there around like 8:30 or so. I think I got set up in the stand at 9:30, 10 o'clock. I just was going off a sheer memory of what I remembered from last year when I was out there. I didn't even follow up with e-scouting and stuff. It was really quite shoot from the hip. I knew the area I wanted to go to. So I scouted my way in and found this beautiful hollow with just a dirt trail running through it. You can tell that's how they get from the two sides of this valley, in the timber, that is. And, I set up there, I got it fully set up around 9 or 10, and, about 12 o'clock, I ended up killing that buck that day on Monday morning.
Well, talk about quick and painless. I'm sure your wife didn't mind you being home a little bit earlier than that 3-day window that you allotted.
I was able to clean it all out and pack it out and stayed that night and drove home the next morning.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work. A lot of us have it in our minds that it's going to work that way, and rarely does it transpire that way. So was this the second year that you hunted that general area in Ohio?
Sort of. So where I went out hunting in the rut was not this area. I didn't want to go back to that area, but I went out for late season because I still had a tag in my pocket in Ohio, and found this other spot that I went to. So, it's kind of funny because sometimes I feel like the more time and like obsession I put into something, like the more you get thrown out. Thrown off. Like, I just stuck to what I knew. I just knew this hollow looked awesome when I was back in there in the snow in January, and there was tons of rut sign too. And this would have been November 14th. So it was a week later than I went out the year before during the rut. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a little bit better action too for that part of the area, at least.
That's pretty cool. So when you did that late season hunt, last January, I guess that was, you said, would mm-hmm. that have been, you said you marked some rut sign and stuff that looked interesting. Was this all your typical, I'm going to call this like your old woodsman style of hunting, where you're just putting boot leather down, making notes, and, you know, you might have been using your smartphone and kind of logging stuff, pins and stuff like that, but you're not doing any kind of trail cameras and intel scouting of any sort on this public land, are you?
Yeah, no, not at all. So when I decided to go out there in late season last year, I e-scouted it quite a bit. So I knew there was an old cut. I don't know, maybe this was a mile in. It wasn't that far in compared to what I do in Pennsylvania. But anyhow, yeah, so there was an old cut down there, and I wanted to go see that. Stupid, but when I went out in late season last year, I drove all the way out there, put a decent amount of time into figuring out, but also was, you know, not nearly as much time as I put into like the rut hunt when I went out there. I pre-scouted in March for the rut hunt and stuff like that. But this spot I went into blind, besides me scouting. But when I got there last year in late season, I literally got out of my truck and started getting dressed and realized that I forgot my pack. So my pack has my saddle, my platform, my sticks, my knife, half my warm weather gear. Like, it was like devastating. I was like, I just drove 6 hours and I don't have my pack. What I did have is my boots, some of my warm weather gear, and my bow. So I'm like, all right, so I'm here. What am I going to do with this situation? Am I gonna drive home because I don't have my saddle gear, or am I going to go try to figure this out for a couple of days? That's exactly what I did. So I think with that in mind, I was like more loose, kind of thinking like it's going to be a long shot if I kill something. I almost was just scouting around with my bow in my hand, and I was able to find good rut sign and tons of rubs and get some visual on. When I e-scout something, it almost rarely looks like what it is when I show up there. So
it's amazing. Like, you talk with people, and everybody's got a different philosophy on e-scouting. I've done my fair share of it. I know people who, when they're talking about it, I think it's probably very geography-based, right, where you'll have guys that say, you know, I can look at these features and look at this topo map and look at the aerial imagery, and I can be 90% confident that this is the area that I want to be because they've got all these features, and I suspect that there's going to be bedding at this spot, and yada, yada, yada. And there's people that are really good at that, and then you get guys like me who I look at maps, and I'm looking for where edges come together. I'm looking for some of those features, but a lot of the time it's boot leather and seeing if what I – perceive on the maps is anywhere close, and I'm gonna say maybe 50% of the time it mirrors what I expected, but 50% of the time it's not, and I have to adjust.
I completely agree with that. 100%. Because most of the public land hunting hunt in Pennsylvania, it was the good spots were found mostly from scouting. Like, I don't even look at the map anymore because I've hunted it so much that, like, now I just go to places that I haven't been before, like in that general area. Now I just walk to the places that I just want to learn, you know, but I barely even look at the map, you know. Now I looked at the map first time before I went in there, and like you said, maybe 50% of it was accurate to what I believed it to be in my head, but
I struggle with that all the time because I'm like, okay, am I missing something? You know, you listen to other really experienced deer hunters and you're talking about all these things and features, and I think, am I missing something, or is there just that many differences in the areas that I'm hunting versus the areas that those hunters are hunting? Let's just say the Midwest. Let's just compare it somewhere from that Missouri on up through and up, maybe even up into Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, some of those places. Like, is the types of big woods hunting in Pennsylvania, like, yeah, we've got those points and those features, but it's so monotonous and it's the pressures are different. Like, are there factors that are influencing it, making it a little bit trickier than it's led to believe? Or am I just hearing things that make me think it sounds easier than it is at e-scouting? Or am I just truly missing something? I'm just not that good at e-scouting. I haven't figured that out yet.
Right. I don't know, man. I mean, half of the good spots that we found, you wouldn't see on the map anyway. Not even a topographical detail, but just a habit. A habitat detail, you know, there's more thicket here than there is there, and you don't see that on the map. And, you know, oh, that's funny, there's like a scrape line here, but you would have never guessed there'd be a scrape line there, you know? So, I mean, it really does come, you hear repeated everywhere, but it really does come down to boots on the ground, you know? Or you can kind of do, you know, what, you know, let's say like the hunting public guys do. Like, I don't think they e-scout every time they go on an out-of-state hunt. I think that they're just briefly looking at the map and just putting boots on the ground and figuring it out, you know, for a couple of days. And then,
I find as much value in that and then going back to the map as I do spending tons. And I often wonder, too, like you listen to people talk about looking at this and looking at that on the map. And one of the things that's really hard to relate to is a lot of the places that I hunt in Pennsylvania are solid oak forests. Mm. So you get a good acorn crop. You've got a monotonous sea of food supply, and it's really, really hard to pinpoint, okay, is this going to be predicted travel? Because, I mean, there's places where it's thick cover, and, you know, it might not be as predictable of a movement setup. You know, there's so many factors like it. You know, I'm kind of curious. I wanted to ask you, the buck that you killed in Ohio, you said you're hunting in relationship to a chop off, and you went to that area that had good rut sign the previous year. So that was still there, obviously. So, you know, looking back on it, you know, I know this was kind of a short hunt, but do you think that chop off is what played into making that area good? Was it the lack of pressure? Like, was it just was there a good acorn crop in there, that area? Or was there food that held deer that made it? Or was it just the fact that you were in a feature that just funneled deer movement in a generally good area?
Yeah, I think it would be the latter of them, you know, the feature. I still struggle with, you hear so many people talk about like rut funnels and this, that, and the other thing. And I think it's because I'm always kind of looking too hard for something. Like, I'm looking for something very defined. In this case, it's easy to look back now and say I made the right decision because
always is.
Cause I killed a deer there. But I think there's been plenty of other times where I would have made the same decision and maybe not have seen anything too off of what I saw. But in this case, as I was walking in, there was actually a fresh logging road that I didn't even know about. They actually did a cut, very fresh cut, not in the area I was hunting, but out further. I don't even know. I would love to go back and explore it, see where this cut was, but I'm fresh. I mean, just like, you're walking through it and your boots are getting five sizes the size of your foot because all the mud is sticking to them, you know. And through that was kind of the way down to this hollow there. And throughout that mud, I was catching huge tracks. And there was a lot of rubs around these big tracks too. And I was like, man, I'm not even that far from the truck. I mean, I'm not right next to the parking lot or anything, but I'm not where I wanted to be. But I'm seeing all the sign. I'm thinking, man, this is, do I just set up here? Like, there's some fresh, big rubs, monster tracks. Like, there was a big buck, no doubt, within the last 24 hours where I'm standing. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of got hung up on that a little bit. And I almost wanted to set up there. And I actually ended up messaging Johnny Stewart. Not a close friend of mine by any means, but we communicate on Instagram and stuff here and there. And I kind of just described that, hey, this isn't where I was planning on setting up. I want to get down in this hollow more. There's like good sign here. Like, and he just responds back and says, yeah, but do you think it's a daytime sign? I'm like, eh, probably not. You know, like, probably not going to catch a mature deer here in the daytime. So I'm like, yeah, keep on walking. So then I got down into that hollow, and I wouldn't say it was a rut funnel at all. It was really a flat bottom hollow. It's kind of a point of many, or the bottom of many, many big hills. If you ever hunt the strip country, Ohio, it's just crazy terrain. But the trail that I was sitting up over was, that whole valley was a few hundred feet wide. It wasn't like a V where I was sitting, you know what I'm saying? But the only reason I chose to sit there is because it was like a goat path through the center of this valley. And when I say center, I'm talking like it's very flat on either side of this dirt path that ran down the one side of the hill and then up the other side of the hill into that old cutover. Now that cutover is like, I don't know, probably 10 years old or so. So it's just like filled with whips and stuff like that. You almost can't even penetrate it, you know? So I was hunting the edge of that on a heavy trail going through that valley. I was sitting on a downwind side of that trail, if you will, thinking that they're probably going to come out of that cut and go down that trail. I didn't really have a good reason to why they'd be going over back kind of in the direction that I came, but obviously it was a heavy trail and a heavy cover in front of me. So, you know, that was what I based it off of. I didn't want to, it was quite literally one of those times. It was like, just don't think too hard about it. Just get set up and set up here. And I was going to do a full day sit there. And then, 12 o'clock noon, a buck came running in, not where I would expect. He was almost like skirting the, side of that cut instead of coming through it. He ran in behind me. And what happened is, I believe he was smelling the hot doe that was, about 200 yards behind me, which I didn't even know was there, because I was facing the cut. The valley was behind me. The trail was to my left of me as I'm sitting in my saddle. So he went up and found that hot doe and a buck, a little bit bigger than him. And that bigger buck just kept on pushing him off and pushing him off. And then they were kind of just playing grab ace all up on that hill behind me, but you know, about 100, 200 yards away. But I knew in the back of my head that this is like one of their main highways that goes into that, let's call it security cover. Mm-hmm. And that doe wasn't too pleased with the two bucks loose in there, you know? So the bigger one kept on chasing the little one off. And then the bigger one would just book after the doe, and they would run 100 feet that way, 100 feet this way, you know, just typical beautiful rut stuff that you'd love to see. And then before too long, I think it was probably about a half hour I watched that kind of activity. That doe came right up that trail. She wanted to get into that cut over that security cover. And the buck did almost the same thing. It pushed the little one off. He stayed down in that valley. And then he actually ended up coming even closer to me than that dirt trail. Cause I was almost about 30 yards off that dirt trail, cause there wasn't very good trees there to pick from. And he almost came up right under me, and I shot at 10 yards under my tree. I mean, why he got led up right under my tree? That was just by the grace of God. I don't know, but kind of worked out as I planned, I guess you'd say. But
absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that's and first of all, that's an awesome story. I love the way you approached it. You didn't overthink it. You just went with what you knew and just enjoyed hunting. I think that's great, because so many of us, myself, I'm speaking for myself right now, overthinking it. Like I did a hunt in New Jersey where I was mainly focused on trying to shoot a bear this okay. year on this hunt, but I had whitetails in the back of my mind, and so many places that I just overthought, you know, how do I want to hunt this? How do I want to approach this still hunting or stand hunting? And it like, sometimes it's like, you gotta not allow that to consume you, or you're just going to drive yourself nuts mentally and just go out and have fun to some degree. I mean, you want to be strategic and have that game, but at the same time, you have to accept the fact that the deer are going to do what the deer are going to do. And you have to also have a little bit of luck get involved.
One thing I also, is kind of a cool part of that story too, is like where those deer, well, you know, I always get all kind of stressed about my ground set and stuff like that. But like in this case, like I wasn't that stressed about it, cause I was like, what do I got to lose? You know, it's the rut. I got 3 days. Like, I'm not going to like freak out over that kind of stuff. Well, that doe and that, bigger buck that I ended up shooting, and I say bigger buck, it was just bigger out of those two. It was probably a 2-year-old 8-point. It wasn't anything huge, but nice deer. For sure. But, they ended up coming from the direction that I came in on and most certainly would have walked over my scent trail. Now, obviously it was the rut. They weren't, you know, so on the cue to smell human scent on the ground, but like, that's the kind of stuff that I'll start overthinking and start being like, I can't sit up here because I just walked down that trail or something like that. Now, I purposely avoided that heavy trail, but I crossed that heavy trail to come up to sit where I was, you know? So just, yeah, like you said, sometimes you just get in your head and just overthink it too much. You know, you gotta be smart and strategic, but also you can't be like, you gotta know that nothing's ever going to be perfect. Like there's gonna be ground scent there, you know, like, okay, well, if I'm in a good spot, then let's let that be that margin of error in the system. And hopefully that doesn't screw them up too bad, you know?
And I think one thing that we should really highlight here is how well do you know the piece of public land that you're going in after on the hunts? And I say this rhetorically because, it's easy when you're really fresh to an area to have those things over, like, you just completely overthink them because you don't know what the best situation is as far as bedding to food and where the expected deer movement is. So I think that's for me when I drive myself the most nuts is like, okay, I think this looks the best. Is this going to hurt me if I walk here or not? Like when you hunt an area repeatedly and you kind of figure out where the better access is over time, that's different. For me, I think like when I go to camp and I'm hunting a new area, like I try to turn it off to a degree. I mean, I'm trying to hunt smart. I'm hunting the wind. I'm hunting this, but I have to take it as there's a good chance I'm going to screw something up, but hopefully I've done my due diligence up until this point that I'll still learn something and take it for the next hunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one private land buck this year, one public land buck using some similar tactics. I'm gonna ask the stupid social media question that so many people would ask on this, but it's fresh, it's relevant. We were just talking about social media here before we started this, but did one of those two bucks matter more to you? Did the public land buck matter more to you than the private land buck, or did the private land buck mean more to you than the public land buck? I know, stupid question, but I'd be curious to see what your thoughts are, because you know that rabbit hole we could go down.
Yeah, it's a good question. Man, they were both such cool hunts, and I hope I didn't downplay them at all by like telling my story. I've told it. I was talking to Charlie the other day, like just kind of told all this stuff. So like, hopefully I had the same amount of enthusiasm and stuff like that. I don't want the audience to think that like, oh man, he didn't even sound like he was that thrilled about that. I was absolutely thrilled about both these deer. I mean, crazy. I mean, I feel like I did a lot of things right, but also, like I said, like you said, luck's got to be on our side. It always is with deer hunting.
Unless you're Johnny Stewart, he doesn't believe in luck.
Yeah. Well, he's a heck of a woodsman too.
He is.
But he just runs them down though. He just been chasing them down this week.
Yeah, crazy. I'll say.
But I would say, just to answer your question, I'll kind of break it down a little bit more. The big buck that I killed at my home farm meant more to me, because I put in so much energy and time, and thought into hunting this property this year. But Ohio was just so cool because, I just went in there, not taking it too seriously. Just used my quote unquote woodsman skills, and it just, it worked out perfectly. Again, luck totally was on my side there too, but, I don't know. My buddy asked me in the beginning of the year before I killed my deer, he said, almost the same question you said. He said, would you rather kill 150 on private or 100 inch deer on public? And I told him 150 inch deer on private because 100 inch deer, is, I feel like pretty attainable. I think if you put in some work, you can kill 100 inch deer. Now, if it was a 150 on private and 130 on public, I don't know. It all depends on the hunt. You know what I'm saying? Like, my standards are not as high as they will be here on my private land when I go and hunt on these public pieces. And not saying all that to say that I probably would shoot 100 inch, 110 inch buck on these, public land hunts that I go on just because such an adventure. Mm-hmm. Like it's just, you get to pack your deer out. You just like, it's, you're in the middle of nowhere. It's a lot goes into that too. So that can be really special as well. So I don't know. I don't know if that helped answer. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but in my case, this big buck I killed at my home farm was pretty special. My first time here. And, obviously the biggest buck in the neighborhood probably too.
It absolutely answers my question, but it's one of those things where you can go on and on forever about it. I mean,
yeah.
Because like that whole rhetorical, would you rather 150 on private or 100 inch on public? Like, I'm going to be the first to say there's a lot of people who talk big that I would rather shoot 100 inch deer on public than 150 inch deer on private land. But mm-hmm. like we're speaking so rhetorically, like you cannot put yourself into that situation and really yeah. understand or know what it's like. And I honestly don't know how many of those people know how big 150 inch deer is. Like,
yeah.
like if you truly put yourself in those shoes and those situations that you could actually know and experience it, I would really like to then ask that same question, say, would you still rather shoot that 100 inch deer on public versus 150? I mean, right. that's just kind of a little bit of a rant, but I kind of go back to what we were saying before and what you were alluding to on your public. There's more to it than the size of the antlers. The size of the antlers are awesome, but the pursuit of your 150 on private land, there is a different story to that led up to that makes it just as gratifying as the story leading to your 100 inch deer on public land. And at the end of the day, we can all make justifications and come up with all these philosophies. And at the end of the day, I'm still going to do what I want to do. And if Troy doesn't like it, that's fine. Troy doesn't have to like it, but it's what I want to do, what makes me happy, and vice versa. And that's just open-ended. Like I'm just amazed at how much of the back and forth finger pointing we get amongst guys. And I mean, it's healthy to a degree because competition is healthy. It makes you a better person to agree, but it can also bring out the worst in you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it, for me, it all revolves around the experience, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not the kind of guy that's, you know, if you want to say I'm going to hold out for a big buck this year and then end of November rolls around and you decide to shoot a smaller buck, dude, go for it. like whatever makes you happy. You know what I'm saying? But it's all about the experience. So like, there's so many ways you could put that question. Would I rather shoot a 120 inch buck with a rifle during a deer drive on public land? Like, or a private 140 or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
Like that's way different to me. I'm not, we don't have to answer that question, but that's way different to me than you just can't neck it down. And it's so situational, you know?
Exactly. You said the perfect words. It's so situational and it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, we get into the the private land deer hunting and the deer shaming or the size of this and the justifications. Like, it's different for everybody. My antler standards where I hunt are different than yours. And guess what? It's okay if they're different. It doesn't matter that they're different. And as long as I don't impose what I want on you and vice versa, we can live our lives and do our things hunting. Like, it's just amazing to me how much BS there goes on in that area right now. And I don't know if it's just because of social media. I don't know if it's because of just what the hunting industry has done for the last umpteen years in video hunting. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just human nature.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's always situational. Like I killed that big one this year, but next year I'm going back to my goal of hopefully trying to just kill a 3 or 4 year old in my house here. You know, I'm not gonna try to, as much as we'd like to think it, you can't hold deer or manage deer too well on 50 acres when you have your neighbors that hunt too, you know. One of the deer that was on my property this year, a lot, got killed 3.5 miles from here, which is crazy because it's pretty, you know, residential. It's not like the mountains where they can just run a mountain out 3.5 miles. He's crossing major roads. So it's like, you know, you just never know. So just hunt and do what makes you happy, you know. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, it's like we said a few weeks ago with Jeremy and Dimitri from Antler Up podcast. Just cut the crap and enjoy the hunt.
Yeah, exactly.
But man, hey, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I really appreciate you sharing your story, sharing hunting experiences this year, sharing this philosophy, and most importantly, I'm really honored for you to share your faith story with us in the beginning of this and how much that means. So, again, thanks for hopping on. Sure. Thank you for being so forthright in all that, because that's big. Because at the end of the day, man, we get fired up about whitetails, we get fired up about hunting, but there's a lot bigger things to talk about than that.
Yeah, I know we didn't even discuss about even going there with this podcast. So yeah, I know that was a little maybe surprising to some people. So surprising to us too.
It's just the way it's led. But hey, anything you want to leave us with?
Yeah, no, not much. Hopefully, I'll have a couple videos. I'll have that Ohio buck on video. So I'll try to post that within the next couple weeks here, and I'll probably try to put together the bits and pieces video of my big buck kill, but as I disclosed earlier, get it on film, but I did film like the recovery and stuff like that. So I'll probably try to put something together for that. But other than that, yeah, just enjoy it. Have fun. Enjoy God's creation. You know, if you don't, if you think you're a little bit lost and maybe looking for something, maybe reach out if you're hearing this, and maybe me or Mitch can help lead you in the right direction.
Absolutely. You know, I've said that before, you know, anybody can reach out to me, you know, social media or email. Troy, if people want to follow along with you, what's a good way to follow along, or is that going to continue based on what we were talking about earlier?
Yeah. Yeah. You can follow me at DTRX_outfitters. That's just a play on my last name, Dietrich. But anyway, I have a little at-home bow shop and work on some bows and stuff like that. So that's what that account started as. I don't do any outfitted hunts or anything like that. But you can follow me there. That's my same handle on YouTube as well. But I'll probably be getting off Instagram and Facebook here shortly. I run a big buck contest as well. We didn't talk about that, but during the hunting season. So once we put that all to bed and get the last final raffles done, then I'll probably be off social media here for a while. But maybe I'll try to check my messages just in case anyone tunes into this here. But
absolutely,
just enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that big buck contest because we didn't want to mention that it's rigged. Troy just shoots the big ones on his place now.
I got second place, and the first place was a public land buck. Yeah,
nice.
155. Something change.
Nice, so nice, nice. What did your score, by the way?
153 and some change.
That's a heck of a deer.
I know.
Heck of a deer.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Good deal. Hey, let's wrap this up, man. Thanks again.
Yep, no problem.
You You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.